Okay, this is it. This is our final hour on the ship, because next hour, Marianne the Ghostbuster is going to join us and take some of the calls. We will be back in a moment. We'll take more of your open line phone calls, some of our live audience calls. Of course, when you're on a ship dealing with ghosts, I don't think I should say live audience calls. You never know who's there. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie, live at the Queen Mary, and our guest is Eddie Connor. He is a humorist, soul intuitive, author of, I'll let you say it, Eddie.
Kicking the Big Butt Syndrome.
What is that?
It's about how humans contradict their energy or their thoughts with negative thoughts and get stuck in the treadmill of life.
So true, so true. An accomplished speaker. Eddie tours the globe, conducting metaphysical retreats and tours to Mexico, China, Peru. Eddie will be one of the presenters here at Ghost Fest this weekend. Are you a ghost guy, Eddie?
I am a ghost guide. I did not start out as a ghost guy. I started out as an intuitive. I was always able to sort of see and hear things ever since I was a little kid. And I grew up in the South, which is always very colorful. So I had a Bible-thumping Southern Baptist kind of crazy grandmother that would talk in tongues. And she would tell us the things that she would see. And when she would, her philosophy was to be seen and not heard if you were a kid. And that is when I started going inside, being really quiet and just paying attention to the energy around me. And that's when I started seeing ghosts.
How many have you seen in your lifetime?
In my lifetime, I had probably at least 10, just that were phenomenal experiences, and a bunch of little bitty ones.
Do they become friends of yours?
Whenever I was a kid, I was at my grandma's house, and she would send us out to play after breakfast. And this particular day, there was a storm, so she just put us on the front porch because she was tired of seeing us. And when we were playing on the front porch, my two brothers and myself, I just looked up, and there was an old man sleeping on the side of her porch. He was leaning against the house and sort of snoozing. He had his hat pulled over the top of his head, and he had his hands folded across his stomach, and he was sawing the logs. And I just remember he wasn't there whenever I was, one moment before.
Sure.
And as I started watching him, he grasped his chest and he started coughing and he fell off the porch. I ran to the side of the porch to see if he was okay. And whenever I got to the side of the porch, he disappeared right in front of my eyes. It freaked me out. I didn't even tell my brothers about it because I was always the weird kid anyway.
Do these global trips have anything to do with your spiritual awakening at all?
They absolutely do. I always wanted to go to Peru since I remember seeing the movie Resurrection.
Yes.
With Ellen Burstyn. And I remember the postcard at the end of the movie of Peru. And I had an affinity for it. And I've been a couple of times now, and I take groups there. And if you've never been to Machu Picchu or South America and Peru in particular, you have to go. It'll change your life.
Do you think those ancient cultures were a little more adept at understanding the spirit world than people do today?
Oh, absolutely. I think proof of that is that their civilizations are still standing today when we can't even build a condominium that'll stand more than 10 years.
So true.
So,
what's the most frightening ghost story, Eddie, that you've ever encountered?
The most frightening ghost story was I was in my mid-20s. I lived in North Carolina before I moved out to Los Angeles, and didn't have any money whatsoever. So we lived in this sort of rundown condo complex.
Sure.
And we had to sign the year contract. And from the first day we moved in, it was a real eerie, kind of funky place, something you couldn't quite put your finger on.
Right.
And I immediately started having dreams of someone being murdered with an axe. And it started with the dreams
first. Nice dream, Eddie.
It was weird. And it would go on like this for a couple of months. And then I would start seeing it whenever I would be, if we were talking in that condominium, I would see a flash of something happening. Then I would start seeing an image of a man hanging from a barn. And then the images, it got so scary before I was awake as an intuitive that every time I would take a shower in that place, I would lock all the doors and windows, I would lock the bathroom door, and I would put the phone on speed dial to 911.
Scared the heck out of you.
It freaked me out.
Not a way to live, Eddie.
No. So I would count the days down to the end of the lease. And for my best friend's birthday, I took him to see a reputable psychic for his birthday. He was scared to go by himself. I went with him, and those two were sitting like this, and I was sitting a good 10 feet out of the way on the other side of the room. And the psychic was talking to my friend, Tim, and right in the middle of his reading, with her eyes closed, she turned in slow motion, and she pointed right at me, and she said, "What you think you see in the shower is real. It is not made up." And then she turned and finished doing his reading. Now, I'd never told anybody except for my best friend. And
well, you've now told about 5 million people.
I know. Oh, my God. And so we finally got to move out. And about 1 year after that incident, I was with a teacher of mine. And she and I were driving down the road. And she said, "Eddie, when I was a little girl, there was a murder down on that property." She said before those condominiums were there, it was a barn. And she said there was a little boy found murdered. Oh, somebody had hacked him up with an axe. And then 1 week later, they found his uncle hanging in the barn. And that night, whenever I went home and had a dream that what had happened was the uncle was molesting the little boy.
Yeah, and killed
the boy, was going to tell his father. And so the uncle killed the boy and then killed himself. That's the scariest ghost story
really
I've ever been through.
Eddie, hang with us. We're going to take some phone calls. We're going to chat with people in the audience as well.
Awesome.
Hi, George. Thanks for having me here. I'm Kathy from Tucson.
Hi, Kathy. Well, you came a long way for this, didn't you?
We sure did. My husband said we have to get out there to see George. And I said, okay, so here we are.
Is that your husband right over there?
He is right over there.
Oh, who's that guy over there?
It's just some guy I met tonight.
Oh, okay. All right.
Anyway, I've got a story to tell you. Years ago, I was pronounced dead on the table during surgery.
Oh, my God.
And obviously revived.
You don't look dead anymore.
Not anymore. Too bad. But at any rate, I've had many ghostly encounters since my near death. But one of the most profound was when we moved from California to Tucson, Arizona, a year and a half ago, and moved into this house. It's really not all that old. And during the middle of the night, about 1 or 2 in the morning, you can hear, first of all, the front door opens and closes, and you hear little girls running around, talking, giggling, and you hear a family in the kitchen with the pots and pans, the cabinets closing, as if they're in there cooking. It almost sounds as if we've tapped into a different dimension, and their life is just going on like nothing. I've had many guests come and stay with us since we've moved to Tucson. It's a popular place to come
sure
to.
Is.
And they've all experienced the same thing. But what happened a couple months ago, my daughter and I were watching TV, and as I turned and looked down the hallway, came running this little boy, about 4 years old, like he was wearing his socks and sliding down. He stopped, looked at me. He looked like he was more shocked than I was. We met eye to eye, and poof, disappeared. And that was, he was very solid looking. He looked like he came from the air about, the 1850s. With
and
the
it just,
clothes.
You know, it makes you for a moment question yourself. And then you realize, no, what I saw was real.
Oh, absolutely. And when my daughter saw me get up and practically fly across the house, she came running too.
Well, I'm glad you're alive and kicking. All right, thanks. Appreciate it. Let's go to our next phone call. Let's go to our west of the Rockies line. You're on Coast to Coast. It's your turn. Hi there.
Hi, my name is Stacy, and I'm listening to you on KFI.
Hi, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Well, we lived in a house in Brooklyn. We were 5 generations in the house. It was built in 1860. Now, the owner of the house built it for his daughter for a wedding. She fell down the stairs and died. Every year after that, until we moved, someone in the family fell down the stairs. Also, the back living room was used for the funerals. We had every engineer you could think of in there. You could not get that room warm. It was ice cold at all times.
Why did people stay in this house?
Well, it was a family tradition.
What kind of a tradition is that? What kind of family are you in?
Well, they were educated, and they figured that it was no such thing as a ghost, and we just braced it out.
Man, that's something. Okay, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Tommy, go ahead.
Well, good afternoon, or good morning, George, I should say. It is now
it
morning.
It is now morning, isn't it?
Yes. I'm a Southern Californian from the Duarte area by way of Toronto, Canada.
I noticed the A.
I just had a little thing to share with you, and I could take up your whole show with stories, but my wife's mom passed away in October the 26th of this year, and we had spent a lot of time at the hospital with her during her period of death, I call it.
Sure.
And she was talking to the family in the room. She was in hospice at this time. And she had mentioned to my family, to my wife and the rest of the gang there, that my name is David. And she said, David knows. And nobody could make any sense of it, eh? Well, I had seen her spirit leaving her body, eh? But not totally leaving it. And I'm sensitive to these things. I see it all the time. It's kind of a normal thing for me. And I recognized that she was having a bit of difficulty. So I decided that maybe I could do something to help her along, eh? And I kind of helped her to discover the door to go through. And, you know, thanks be to the good Lord that I was given this gift to do that. She was able to go through, and I actually watched her go through, and at that moment in time, I actually felt the presence of the light.
David, what do you think would have happened if you weren't there to help her?
God only knows the answer to that, George.
Literally.
Literally, she would have found her way, eh? It was just as invigorating an experience for me as it was for her, I'm sure.
That's a good story. Thanks. Appreciate it. Eddie, what do you think of some of these stories? I mean, everybody, all over the place, they are experiencing these very strange things.
It's kind of like everybody's coming out of the closet with their ghost stories more than ever before. And I think it's because of programs like yours and books and new material, the internet, and people feel safer talking about the other side in a way that they never have before.
All right, very good. Tommy, you're over there. You've got another one for us. Tommy, do you have another one for us?
Hi, my name is Umberto, and I'm from Harbor City.
Hello, Umberto.
How you doing, George?
Good.
Nice to meet you.
You
big
too,
fan
my
of
friend.
You.
Thank you.
I just had a little experience about 45 minutes ago. I came over because my friends told me about the show, so I was driving up here looking for my friends. And what I did, I took the wrong entrance, and I went by, I believe it's by near the pool area, and there was a lady working in there. And the lady, I went up to her to ask her questions, how do I get to so-and-so? And she freaked out when she saw me because she got really scared. And she goes, oh, my God, you just scared me. And I said, why? He goes, today there's been a lot of activity going on tonight. I was in a lower level, and I've been hearing sounds. I've been feeling. And she was like, really? And I started asking her questions. And she allowed me to go in the pool area. And as soon as I walked in there, I felt something. It was just interesting. And she told me that every time she goes in that area, she has to go in there. She gets really scared. And when I went in there, I started taking pictures. I went all the way down, started taking pictures. She stayed up there. She didn't want to go down there with me. And I started taking pictures, but I felt something. It was just very eerie feeling. And as I was exiting the place, there's two doors. One was open, one was locked. As soon as I passed that door, the door just slammed. It shook. And the lady told me, you see why I'm scared of this place?
Yeah.
And I just, my heart beat. And I took a picture immediately of that, and I just walked away. And she told me, can you please escort me? I need to go to the other side. Because I'm really scared and I don't want to walk by myself. I said, not a problem. So I walked with her, and that's when I met your girlfriend and your two wonderful friends. And I told them about the story, and they told me, you need to share the story with George.
All right. I'm glad you're still here.
So am I.
Will you come back to the ship again next
year?
Yes,
I will. This place is fascinating. It's just, as soon as you walk in here, you can sense the presence of, you can just feel the presence of, this place has a lot of history. That's the feeling that I got when I walk in the ship.
All right, thanks, Umberto. Appreciate it. First time caller line, you're on Coast to Coast. Welcome to the show. Hi there.
Oh, George, this is Dan McDaniel from Metter, Georgia.
Yes, sir. Welcome to the program.
Because I've got a Ouija board story with sort of a twist, like a good and evil thing.
You mean there is a good ending to a Ouija board story?
Oh, a good versus evil.
Okay, what happened?
1969, I was 6 years old. There was two of us kids and my parents. And my dad was unsure about God, you know, what church you do and all that, and curse religion. And my mother told him, don't do that, you know, because she was raised Catholic and all that, and he cursed the church. Anyway, they got to being with a Ouija board, and had them out in the backyard digging for money, said that they would be rich. There was money in the backyard. It told them who owned the house we was renting. You still there?
I'm listening intently. So are 500 other people.
Then he asked,
and 5 million other people. Go ahead.
Yeah, he asked a friend of his, you know, seen him like the day before, worked with him, asked where he was at that time. Ouija board said dead. So he got a phone call, and they said that he got killed in a car accident.
Oh, my God.
And a couple nights after that, my dad got scared then. Then we heard all kind of rattling in the kitchen. Got up the next morning, was scared to get up, and everything was strewn all over the place. Nobody in the house. But after that, George, my dad started praying, you know, for help. All of a sudden, the whole family started seeing visions. I woke up 6 years old, lions running around, growling. And my mother said Daniel was in the lion's den. The whole family seeing visions, 3 days and nights. Well, we ended up going to my grandparents, and they took us to the hospital. Well, then my parents seen his dead friends, his brother. His brother walked up to him as a priest. And he said, hello, Mr. McDaniel. My name's Father Hay. And Dad's brother died from a bad heart, but before he died, he was out cutting hay, and my dad told him not to do that. You're going to die. But the doctors, to make a long story short, are temperatures, and they said they didn't know how we was even walking around. The temperatures were so low, we shouldn't even be here. You know, it was like a higher power letting my father know that keep yourself in check.
You know what? There's a moral to a story like that, Eddie, when I think they try to give you a sign. Do you have any Ouija board stories?
I don't have any. I don't have any Ouija board stories. I have a one time whenever I was doing a telephone reading for someone from North Carolina to Kentucky. He wanted to communicate with somebody on the other side, and we were trying to pull. We seemed to pull every relative in that he didn't want to talk to that had already passed away. And to make a long story short, we were just sitting on the phone quiet for just a second, and all of a sudden, the phone got very staticky, and then the word Tim. Came through, but it was real groggy, it was weird. Then it got statically and then crackly, and then I was laying on the bed with my eyes closed, and I opened my eyes scared to death there was going to be a dead man standing at the foot of the bed. And sometimes I do know that with electrical equipment that they can break through
sure.
with their frequency and that frequency.
Why you, Eddie?
I think it's everybody. I think everybody has experiences. I really do.
Absolutely. Okay. Hey, Eddie, thanks for being on the program.
Thank
Good luck
you.
At Ghost
I appreciate
Fest.
It so much.
And I'm going to be back. We're going to take final phone calls right here because Marianne the Ghostbuster is in next hour. And you won't believe some of the things that she has. So I'm George Norrie. I'm on the Queen Mary. And we'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. The Love Boat. See what happens when I'm on remote? I lose total control. I'm going to be in St. Louis, by the way, for Thanksgiving for a couple of weeks, and then I'll be back here in Los Angeles. Let's take a few calls, and we'll go back to our network break, and we'll come back and talk with Jeff Ballinger. Let's go west of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast. You're on the air. Hi there.
Hi, George.
Welcome to the show. Where are you calling from?
Tucson.
Oh, well, another Tucson call.
Yeah, this is Liz.
Hi, Liz. What's on your mind?
I'm from Royal Oak. We've talked before.
Yeah.
Okay. I just have to throw this in. While you were rooting for St. Louis, I was rooting for Detroit.
Well, wait a minute. I was also rooting for Detroit because that's where I was born. All my St. Louis friends who were here were rooting for the Cardinals.
I can see that you were. Actually, I remember you saying that you were rooting for both of them. My first baseball game was...
Well, that's because it was the politically correct answer.
Yeah. Briggs Stadium. my first baseball game. Had to be back sometime 1956 or 7. I have a family story about the Queen Mary. Would you like to hear it?
Yeah, sure thing.
Okay. Backstory real quick. My father went to the University of Massachusetts and got his degree in public health in 1936. He ended up leaving Boston, where he's from, and coming out to Michigan, and he ended up working for the Kellogg Foundation. Old Mr. Kellogg used to regale us with stories, of course, which you get bored with when you're a teenager, hearing stories your parents tell you, but he worked for Old Mr. Kellogg. And my dad was helping him with the Well Baby Clinic, and make a long story short, he taught my father photography so he could take pictures, you know, blah, blah, blah. And when World War II broke out, my father enlisted, and with his skill of photography, he ended up in the Army Air Corps. He was on the ground in England. I really don't remember how the troops went over, but coming back, they came back on the Queen Mary, the troops. And
they
he
sure
had
did.
Pictures. He had pictures. My mother has them somewhere. But, you know, they're these young lads. They all look very young. They're smiling. They're so happy they're going home. Just the deck is covered, you know, stem to stern, you know, side to side, just packed with these young men sitting cross-legged, laughing, happy, smiling. And as a footnote, he met my mother in Scotland in the war, and they kept in touch after the war. And I guess, I don't know, at some point he proposed. I don't know, you know, if they had
good for him, because now you're here.
Well, my mother in 1947 left Britain on the Queen Mary and went to New York. And then they were, you know, went to Boston and so on.
Okay, well, I'm glad everything worked out, and thanks for sharing that. This boat does have a lot of history. Go ahead, Tom.
It's Rebecca Fox from Long Beach, California.
Hi, Rebecca. How are you?
I'm wonderful. I'm very excited to be here.
It's a neat place, isn't it?
Well, I have a little story.
You're in shock. You look like you're in a daze. Hello, Rebecca.
Hi. I can barely hear over here.
Okay, go ahead.
It's really loud. Well, thanks again for being here. 16 years ago, me and my best friends, Rob and Wayne, were at his mother's new house in Huntington Beach, California. They had gone downstairs to get something from the kitchen because we were all hungry, and I was laying on the bed listening to music. And the last thing I remember is shutting my eyes, and there was just candles in the room. It was very...
romantic.
Yes.
Mood setting.
Mood setting, yes.
Right.
So I was relaxed. The next thing I remember is I was in the hall. Well, I heard screaming, and my eyes were open, but yet, like, the light just went on. I realized that I was in the middle of the hallway. My friends were screaming and started running away from me. I couldn't move any parts of my body at all except the balls of my eyes.
You were paralyzed.
Absolutely paralyzed. As I looked down at the floor, I realized that I was not touching the floor, and I was floating slowly towards my friends. One of my friends, Wayne, started down the stairs. He was absolutely horrified, as I was, but I couldn't do anything about it. My other friend stopped from running, turned around, and came back towards me. As he held his arm out to, like, grab me, I fell to the floor, and then I started crying, and I, you know, obviously could move.
What happened to you? What do you think?
It's like I had no function over my whole body. I felt like something was inside of me.
You were possessed.
Absolutely. And it was the scariest thing of my life. And at that time, I wasn't even allowed to cry. I just was able to look through my eyes. So when it released me, that's when the tears came and the screaming, and we ran out of the house. His mother owned an art gallery. So we waited out on the curb for like an hour and a half until she arrived back, because we were 16 at the time. We told her we weren't coming in the house, we needed a ride home, and he came back with us to our house. It was a few weeks later, actually about a month later, he called. He was back in military school, and he said that his mom believed him. She talked to the neighbors, found out that the house was actually on the market for a while because the husband had shot the wife and then turned the gun on himself. And it was on the market for a long time, but she bought it. She didn't believe in anything like that, so she didn't mind telling her children about it. So
let's hope you never get possessed again.
Oh my gosh, absolutely.
We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie, live on the Queen Mary. We're going to take more of your calls. And also, now we're also going to talk with Jeff Ballinger. You know, he's been a guest on Coast to Coast, GhostVillage.com. He's written 6 books, World's Most Haunted Places and Haunted Houses and all kinds of things. What else do you write, Jeffrey?
Well, I've written about nightmare interpretation, dream interpretation book. And I wrote a book called Communicating with the Dead, which was kind of a look at the history and use of spirit communication devices like the Ouija board and mirror gazing and tarot
cards. Tell me about mirrors. We haven't talked about mirrors tonight, and they're spooky.
Yeah, they certainly can be. The idea goes back to very ancient times, from the time when people would gaze into just a simple puddle and see a reflection. And if you look back to the ancient Greeks, you know, the Oracle at Delphi, they were gazing into a clear optical depth and getting visions and passing these visions on to anyone who would pay for them. So the idea has been around for millennia, and the concept is to stare into this depth and see what comes. People glean the future. You know, Nostradamus was said to gaze into a bowl of water, which is mirror gazing, right? It's the same concept, looking into that optical depth. Scrying, you know, a similar practice. Black mirrors, where again, people, you don't want to see your own reflection, but you want to just see this optical depth and see what comes of it. Now, I've tried it. I didn't get great results. I had interesting results. I don't know if you've ever had Dr. Raymond Moody on.
He's been on the program. Yeah. I haven't, but he's been on.
Yeah, he's got a psychomanthium chamber, and I've had the opportunity to talk to him several times about this chamber, which he bases on the ancient Greeks.
And what does he do with it?
It's a chamber where it's very low light. There's a very big mirror. You're in a very comfortable chair sitting low to the ground and a low light right behind the chair. So you can't see the source of the light and you can't see your own reflection. And you kind of slow down your breathing and you start to get visions. And I've spoken with more than one person that's been through his chamber. Where one person claims something flew out of the mirror at him to the point where he dove out of the chair. Now, whether it was real or something he perceived it as real enough to jump out of the way. And then another person, a psychic who went through it, actually had almost a near-death experience without ever being in any physical danger. The tunnel, starting to see relatives that he recognized, and had this really incredible, powerful experience. And then it was over, and he was back.
Every time I look at a mirror, it breaks. What does that mean?
Well, you know, could mean 7 years of bad luck, I think.
Have you ever gotten reports of people who look at mirrors and they can't see a reflection of themselves?
Vampires?
Yes.
George, vampires?
Does that happen?
I don't know. I've never met a vampire. I've met psychic vampires, but that's a whole other issue.
Well, you know, we haven't tonight, Jeffrey, talked about dream interpretations.
All right.
Let's talk a little bit about that.
Sure. I did a book called The Nightmare Encyclopedia, and the objective was to kind of look at not just dreams, but the darker side of dreams, because these are the things we remember. You know, these are the dreams that stick with us. I mean, I remember nightmares I had when I was, you know, 8, 9 years old, and it was just a dream.
Frightening.
Just a dream. You know, I mean, think of dreams you had last week that were just whatever, and you forgot about them by the time you ate breakfast. But these nightmares stick with us, and I think there's a message there. There's a message of some importance.
Are they good for you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Nightmares are good for us?
Because we're trying to get our own attention. We're trying to shake ourselves and saying, something really important here. It's time to take a look at this issue and deal with it. Especially recurring nightmares, things that are happening again and again. It's an issue you simply have to deal with. And there's a lot we can learn from ourselves just by exploring ideas like dreams and nightmares.
I've always been a believer that you can do some incredible things in your dream state. You can accomplish goals. You can get things done.
Sure.
Absolutely powerful. Powerful mechanism.
Absolutely. And you learn some, even if you want to remove all the new age, all the esoteric out of it, you learn about yourself through your own dreams. And the best person in the world to interpret a dream is the dreamer, the person who can put those images into the context of their own lives and learn something more about themselves.
Back to some of the phones. Stick with us, Jeff. Wildcard line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hello there.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Hey.
What?
Hi.
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 Hey.
Hi.
Hey there.
Hi.
Go ahead.
My name is James Driscoll, and I'm calling from Lakewood, California.
Okay, welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
I'm a pagan, and I would just like to share my story about when I was a little kid and I went to my grandma's house.
You're a pagan?
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean you're a bad guy.
No, it means I'm actually more in touch with the spiritual world sometimes. I mean,
How did this all happen for you? Did somebody teach you this?
No, I've always had spiritual connections, and it started with when I went to my grandma's house, and everyone talked about this little girl who was actually ran over by a motorcycle outside the house.
Oh my!
And she had it happen. A lot of people say she actually inhabited the house. And I had my experience when I was a little boy, and I was wandering around the house in the middle of the night at dark with my grandma's lantern. And I was just messing around, and I went in the girl's old playroom, and I saw her floating above the ground in this pretty dress. It was very detailed, very real, and you could see through her, but not completely, and she was spinning. But her mouth was saying something I couldn't interpret. I couldn't read lips at that time. And I ran, and I went back to my mom in my grandma's living room, and I just held on to her. I was so afraid because I could tell that thing was real. And I just... It gives me chills every time I talk about it because it was so real at that moment, and I was like, what is this? And then I began to cope with spirits more on a, well, they're not evil all the time. Well, I mean, they're never all that evil.
How old are you?
I'm 18, actually.
Where did you learn all of this at 18 years old?
A lot of Wiccan books,
You do all this yourself?
Yeah, I'm a solitary. If anyone knows of any covens, good covens, I'm here. I've just been learning this, and it's just been a really neat practice for me, when you're attuning yourself with spirits and you try to relax your body and try to listen to, those voices that might not be yours, you begin to realize that they're all around us, and they're not malicious. They just sometimes they want to be heard.
Well, let me tell you something. At your age, you've got your act together, doesn't he, Jeff?
I think anyone who explores their own spirituality and asks a lot of questions, I'm a fan.
Yeah, but 18 years old?
Sure. Hey, well, when did you get interested in the paranormal?
11.
Yeah, I was 10.
Yeah.
I don't mean to, try to one-up you, but...
You did.
I was 10. Actually, I was 9 and a half.
But it's my microphone.
You're right.
International line, you're on Coast to Coast. Where are you calling from? Hi there.
Hello, I'm calling from beautiful British Columbia.
Well, welcome to the program. Go ahead, hon.
Yeah, it's good to actually talk to you. I wanted to tell you a story about communication with my son after he died. He hadn't been dead a year, and it was Halloween, and I looked at his picture, and I said, oh, I wonder if I'm going to see you today, because this is when the veil between the two worlds are the thinnest. And about 3 o'clock that afternoon, his friend called and said he wanted to come over, and he brought me a picture, and I pulled it out. It was in a live animal trap box, and I pulled it out, and there his face was just grinning at me with this smile that said, ah, I know something. And it was a really moving experience.
Well, let me tell you something. There are spiritual events. I'm convinced they're for the living because they made her feel good.
Absolutely. We all get our signs, and they're so powerful. They're perceived as real, and they're life-changing. I mean, this woman will remember that forever, and I think that's wonderful. It's to be cherished. It's a gift.
What's the greatest spiritual story that you've ever heard?
Oh, gosh, there's so many. But I think when someone has a near-death experience, especially, they're powerful. When someone goes through that, of actually physically being near-death, having a spiritual experience out of the body, seeing loved ones, and then coming back with an understanding that there is indeed something more beyond life, but beyond just, the veil of death. That is so powerful when you talk to someone and you hear the conviction in their voice and you see the look in their eye when they tell you about these stories. that they perceived as absolutely real, and it's real to them, and they will deal with that the rest of their days. And it's contagious. You know, you hear about these things, you think about your own mortality, you think about what comes next, and it's so powerful. So for me, it's the near-death experience.
Pretty emotional for people, too,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's go to our first-time caller line. Welcome to Coast. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hey, George. How are you this morning?
We're doing great. Thanks.
Sounds like you guys are having a lot of fun.
We're all doing great. Everybody doing great?
Yeah!
And they're doing great. They're still going strong.
Good. Hey, the guy with the ghost PC?
Yes, Joshua Wong.
Right.
He's running around the ship with it right now.
Have him go up on the funnels.
What's that? I couldn't hear you.
Stacks.
I couldn't hear you.
The smokestacks?
Oh, the smokestacks.
Right.
Thanks, Jeff.
I was about 16 years old when I was on the Queen Mary.
Yeah.
And I went up on the up there by the smokestacks, and there was really a lot of energy up there.
What the heck were you doing up there?
Me and a bunch of people just managed to get up there.
They let you up there?
I don't think so.
Ah, they snuck up there.
We won't report you.
No, so what's your presentation going to be, Jeff?
Tomorrow I'm going to talk about the ghost experience, the human experience, the psychological aspects, the physical aspects, the evidence we have, and kind of the spiritual implications of it. So kind of a broad picture of the history of it, how we got to become paranormal investigators, and where people are going with it individually and in a big scale as well.
Do you think we will ever get the real answers about the paranormal world?
Absolutely. We have the real answers, but individuals have them. There are millions of individuals who have their answers. I'm finding my own answers, but I recognize that they're mine, and other people, it won't mean anything to them, and they may call me full of it or a liar or whatever, and that's fine. But it's always been that way. But I think on an individual basis, we get our answers, and that's what matters. I mean, the race is long, and at the end of the day, it was only with yourself anyway. So I'm finding my answers, and I'm okay with that.
Well, there's something very major going on this planet and in this universe.
Sure.
And do you believe in multi-universes?
Yeah. You know, I've been reading a lot about quantum physics and the implications it has for, you know, the idea of, you know, as soon as you make a decision, right, two new universes are created. If you went left or you went right, there's now two variables that have
exactly.
been created. And it keeps splitting off and splitting off and splitting off. And I accept that, you know, as an absolute possibility, an intriguing one. And quantum physics, I think, is really going to put some mathematics behind some of these theories.
Very good. All right. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you.
Next up, Marianne the Ghostbuster on Coast to Coast AM.